This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money here from VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben Wilson, welcoming you back to the South Point Sportsbook Studio. In for Patrick, Amal Shaw here in studio. Dustin on vacation, so Wyatt Tomczyk is behind the glass. We've had a lot of fun in the first hour, and we're about to welcome in our guy, Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, college football national champion at Colorado, because his pecking order is complete, Amal. Pritch's pecking order on his top 20 NFL wide receivers. That's been a very fun summer segment here on the network.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but you forgot two things in the introduction of Mike Pritchard. First round pick and nicest human being you're ever going to meet.
Sure. Yeah, it's easy to forget that because he just, just so nice that you tend to gloss over it. There he is, Pritch. Great to see you. And, you and I were doing shows a couple weekends ago back when the DeAndre Hopkins, the runnings in as far as teams who were interested in him were still very much wide open, and we didn't know where he would end up. It had just come out the day you and I last hosted that Tennessee had a little bit more aggressive interest in him than, say, in New England. So now that that has been made official, D-Hop to Nashville going to the Tennessee Titans, what's your read on this Titan team, and how much of a threat do you view them being now to the AFC South?
More of the same, Ben, and Amal, great to be with you, by the way. And I think it's more of the same because they tried this before with Julio and A.J. Brown. Now they're going to try it with Burks and certainly D-Hop. And D-Hop is coming off a situation in which perception believes that he's no longer that dominant wide receiver. Now, he's wide receiver number one with Tennessee, no doubt, just because of the personnel that they have. And therefore, he created a marketplace in which there was desperation, right? And that's why he got the bag that he got, and certainly friendly confines, too, when you talk about Vrabel. And then you think about the other team, New England, with O'Brien. So it wasn't a team out there that was a stranger to DeAndre. And to me, that's telling. I mean, I think when Arizona's eating over $20 million in dead cap, and now, there's desperation with Tennessee, it tells you where these teams are. So I don't think D-Hop moves the needle for me in terms of who I think is going to be the more competitive teams in that division. I think Tennessee still has a great defense, great personnel on that side of the ball, but offensively, still a lot of question marks in that division.
I would agree with you. We talked about this yesterday, Jeff Parles and I. It doesn't make a difference. I love DeAndre Hopkins. At one point, I thought he was the best receiver in the league, could have made a case for him or Julio Jones. But, Mike, I'm with you. I don't think it makes as much of a difference. I want to go to your Pritch's pecking order in terms of your list. So ESPN Plus had executives, coaches, and scouts list their top 10 wide receivers. You've got 9 of the 10 guys they had in the top 10. And I love your first 5 in the order that you have, because to me, I agree with this one completely. Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, and Stephon Diggs. Tell me just quickly, out of any one of these guys that you love watching or what you love, for me personally, I love JJ. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But out of these 5 guys, is there one guy that you love? And what in particular do you love about that player and what they do?
Well, I mean, this is an impressive list of receivers, great playmakers all the way throughout the top 20 here. But I think when you're in the top 5, you have to distinguish yourself, right? And all 5 of those guys, to me, can play in any system with any quarterback, right? That's not true for a lot of wide receivers. But, Justin Jefferson, he's an incredible, incredible player. I mean, everybody remembers that catch against Buffalo.
Yeah.
And that's what stands out to me. Critical situations, he comes up with a big play. Whether it's a first down or a touchdown, he seems to get open. They seem to utilize him in multiple ways, and it's hard to lock him down. I remember when Jerry Rice used to be an outside receiver, and then teams would go to the cover two and double him, so they moved him inside, and okay, that was impossible to cover Jerry Rice again. So I think Justin's doing that. Devontae, I can't stop talking about this guy's game because it keeps evolving, even at his advanced age and certainly his experience in the league. And to me, he's better than Tyreek Hill in terms of a complete route runner. So if you can combine Tyreek Hill's speed with Justin Jefferson, athleticism and height, you have Randy Moss pretty much. Right. Tyreek Hill deserves to be in there, but Stephon Diggs is a good playmaker. All these guys have the ability to separate, but more importantly, Amal, they come up with the big play when the team needs it the most. And to me, they're the ultimate playmakers.
Mike, I want to ask you in particular about your former team, the Seattle Seahawks. They've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, who I think has been criminally underrated his entire career. It was just like Dougie Baldwin. I thought Baldwin was so underrated. But they draft a kid in the first round out of Ohio State, Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't know how much you've seen him play. I love his route running. I think he's a pretty good bet at 5-1 to be the offensive rookie of the year. I don't know if you have had an opportunity to watch him in college at all. What your thoughts or anything that you might have heard out of Seattle in terms of what they think of JSN?
Oh, they love him. I'm privy to some pretty good emails being a part of the alumni association up here, the alumni there. And so, Seattle inside the building, the Seahawks are sky high right now. And they're talking about some special things happening this year. I think about a month ago, maybe a little bit over a month ago, I talked about including them in the race in the NFC. I mean, it was a three-team race before: Eagles, 49ers, Cowboys. Now I believe it's four teams with Seattle. But Smith and Jigba, I agree with you. Everybody remembers the bowl game, his coming out party that way, and then the injuries. But just watching him and studying him, he has all the intangibles. He's a great interior wide receiver as well. But to your point, Lockett is highly underrated. If you look at my top 20, I got DK, who I think needs to become a beast. And if he becomes a beast, then Tyler Lockett complements that. And then who's going to cover Smith and Jigba? So Geno should have the luxury of backing up. Geno Smith, the quarterback, should have the luxury of backing up the season that he had last year, because around him, he has supported. His supporting cast is incredible.
All right, win total of 8.5, getting a lot of attention to the over. Smith and Jigba, by the way, at DraftKings, 725.5 is the receiving yardage prop, which if you're bullish on him, if he stays healthy, that could be a good one of one of the few ones to actually look over, as Mike Pritchard, the former NFL wide receiver, joins us right now on Sharp Money. You see Pritch, the comments from Tyreek Hill the other day. He has a podcast now, which I've actually enjoyed. He has some good insights on that pod, but he said, he said he vowed he would break 2,000 yards receiving this year. Interesting comment. I'm curious your take on that as a former receiver in the league.
Well, you got 17 games now, Tyreek. You got freedom off the line of scrimmage. One thing about Tyreek Hill, Ben, is everybody's afraid to jam him because they don't want to get burnt by him. They don't want to see this guy run by him, and they're scared to death of that. So he has so much freedom off the line of scrimmage. And I believe McDaniel is going to incorporate a ton of plays in which he can get the ball quickly, get the ball out of Tua's hands. He needs to, because Tua needs to stay upright and stay healthy. And then if he can kind of create those situations, and Tyreek Hill run after the catch is incredible, as we know, I think he's got a lot of room to roam. Now, 2,000 yards, I mean, everybody has a goal. I'm not hating on him because he set that goal. But this is the National Football League. He plays in a very, very competitive division. And good luck to him. But I don't know if that 2,000 yards is going to happen, though.
It's funny how Amal, this year we've seen he'll say that 2,000 yards, 1,300.5, by the way, is his receiving yardage prop. And Lamar Jackson this summer say 6,000 passing yards is his goal, and he's never thrown for more than, 3,200?
Yeah, and by the way, the all-time record is 1964 by Calvin Johnson. In 2012, he had 122 catches. Even Jerry Rice, when he had 122 catches, wound up at 1,848. So a lofty goal. We'll see if it happens. Pritch, I want to switch gears on you for a minute here. I want to go to college football. I'm not going to miss an opportunity to talk to somebody who won a national championship. You guys had tons of talent. If people had not followed Colorado when you were there and the talent that you guys had, if you've seen that 30 for 30 on the gospel, according to Mac, a great watch. The talent that you guys brought in, Boulder's a beautiful place for people that haven't been there. How does Deion Sanders duplicate the success that you guys had when you were in the Big Eight and it was Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Colorado that were all competing there for the conference?
Yeah, you know, Amal, Coach Prime's doing it. The athletes that he's attracted, he called them Louie, the luggage, the Louie, right? All those guys are highly acclaimed players and, you know, 4 or 5-star athletes. And that was unthinkable not too long ago in Boulder, Colorado, just because of where the program was going and where it was at and what was happening. But Coach Prime, the Prime Effect, has changed all of that. And to your point, I mean, I remember being recruited to Boulder and, you know, just the guys that was on my recruiting trip. I had Rodney Hampton. I had Eric Bieniemy. I had George Hemingway. And there was one other top flight running back. We all came on the same trip. And I'm like, my goodness, this is an incredible collection of running backs that CU is bringing on campus. And that's all about recruiting. And then certainly the mantra out there in Boulder is if you can get them to Boulder, If they can get to that scenic overlook and then they get onto the campus and find out and investigate what's going on, that program is highly attractive, especially when they have it going. So I think that's what's going on. The attention that Coach Prime is getting on YouTube certainly is helping the NIL, the collectives, the support around the program. There's a lot of money in Colorado. And so all that's starting to show back up. And I think, and certainly I know better days are ahead, and I already pounded the over the three games right there earlier this year for the CU Buffaloes.
Mike Pritchard invested in the old alma mater, literally, figuratively, for this upcoming year. Before we let you go, as far as the rest of that conference, the Pac-12, what is another team you find yourself very, very high on as we get ready for August?
Well, you know, Corvallis is sneaky up there with the Beavers, you know. I think the whole conference is competitive. I'm on the Pac-12 Football Alumni Council, and I know one of the things, one of the goals that we had a few years ago was increasing the footprint, you know, keeping these guys home. And DJ comes back, right? He all goes all the way out to Clemson, and now he comes back. So I think that's what's happening, too, with the Pac-12. And all these kids who played high-level high school football are back inside the Pac-12. So looking out for Oregon State. Oregon State, and then certainly Washington with Penix, the quarterback that they have up there, is probably pretty good as well.
Hey, Oregon State, win 10 games. They get DJ Uiagalelei as quarterback, and now it's 8.5 on the win total at plus 120. Give him a follow.
Crazy, right?
And Mike Pritchard. It is funny how that sometimes tends to work. He is Mike Pritchard, kind enough to give us some time here on Sharp Money. As always, great to see you, Pritch. We'll catch up again soon.
That sounds good, guys. My pleasure.
Thank you.
We have a great show still to come as well. Adam Berg joins us in studio for an hour to wrap up the show. Up next, we'll continue our talk on the undefeated teams potentially in college football. A little Heisman Award chat as well, right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Drive too fast and you can hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, because one way or another, speeding catches up with you, paid for by NHTSA. As we welcome you back, second hour of Sharp Money here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hanging out with Amal Shaw, I'm Ben Wilson. We'll have Adam Burke in studio for the final hour of the show. Talk more college football, a little Major League Baseball as well, so looking forward to that, Amal. But we continue our college football discussion.
Yeah.
Potential teams who could go undefeated this year. And I just sort of wondered, all right, how far down the list does it really make sense to go to? And maybe I'm naive on this. I kind of think, all right, unless you're bullish on Clemson, that's probably the limiting point. But you can make a case, Amal, for some of these teams in the 6-1 or longer regions. Maybe it's one team you're really afraid of on their schedule that they will be underdogs to, but if you could play them at a certain number, you play the other side once it gets to that particular point in the season. And a great example would be, we look a little bit longer down the board here. We talk about teams like, you know, like USC at 6-1. That is one team we didn't get to, Amal, and that's a team where they are favored in the Pac-12. If they're able to get through an early part of the season in the non-con, that's a schedule that should theoretically open up. There are a couple of tough games later on in that campaign for the Trojans, but it's all about how they look early under Lincoln Riley, in my opinion, just to see what you're getting after a team that fell flat on their face toward the back end of last year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, they've got Utah at home. Utah is always a nemesis for them, just simply because Kyle Whittingham's teams are extremely tough and physical. You know, the Trojans have the best player in college football. I get people talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., and maybe overall he grades out higher than Caleb Williams. But for what the collegiate game is, a mobile quarterback who can keep his eyes down the field, it's an invaluable thing. I actually said if I was Ohio State, I would have gone to Caleb Williams and said, listen, we'll give you $10 million in NIL, transfer, and you got Marvin Harrison and Emeka Egbuka. All of you can go in the first round. I mean, if I'm a Caleb Williams, I would have put myself in the portal. And I would have gone to SC and said, I need $20 million a year. No, I'm not even joking.
Lane
Kiffin said it best. He goes, Bryce Young should be entering the transfer portal. He should have gone in there and said, look, Nick, you want me to play? You're making $11 million a year. I'm going to have to be on par with you.
I totally get it. I wonder why. And I wonder if we'll get to the point where players,
if they're smart, absolutely.
And they go, okay.
Can you imagine Ohio State's loaded defensively? We're going to get into it with Adam Burke in the next hour. Michigan's loaded. Can you imagine if you're Michigan, you got a ton of big money donors like Stephen Ross. You say, listen, if you brought in Caleb Williams to Ann Arbor or Columbus, it's It's like the old Vince Carter line of the dunk contest. It's over.
Yeah.
It's over. I mean, none of these teams would be able to compete with them. SC's problem is when you look at the schedule, it's fine. San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford, Arizona State to open up, Colorado, Arizona. They're outside of the Colorado game, they're going to win every game by double digits. They're going to drub everybody else. Then they go to South Bend. Notre Dame will have played Ohio State. If they beat Ohio State, it'll be a more challenging game. They're back-to-back with Utah. And then they've got Washington at home and then UCLA. Their toughest games, Utah, Washington, UCLA, all in Los Angeles at the Coliseum. I don't know if this team goes undefeated, but I'll tell you what, Ben, it's not a bad bet on the Trojans at 6-1. I think it's within the possibility. Huskies have a lot of question marks defensively. They've got to go to Eugene on November 11th. I'll tell you what, they've got a stretch here over 5 weeks where they play at Notre Dame, Utah, Washington, at Oregon, and UCLA. Five of these six teams might be ranked at some point in time during the season or when they play them. But the thing is, defensively, the Trojans under Alex Grinch have to get better. Caleb Williams is going to keep you in every game. They're not going to have to worry about getting blown out in any game. But the question is, can they slow down the physical nature of Utah?
Sure. And that's where the question becomes. Caleb Williams is the favorite to win the Heisman at 5.5-1.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the same bet, but you're at 6-1 on them to go undefeated. Is there a bet that you would rather pursue them all? Since we know in the college game, it is dependent, the Heisman voting is on team success.
Well, I would rather bet Caleb Williams because it gives you a little bit more margin for error, right? Plus 550 at DraftKings right now and Williams to win it. But here's the problem. I think he's going to have a spectacular season. I don't see the Heisman voters giving him the Heisman going back-to-back unless he has a year that's comparable or better than the one he had last year. Remember, Lamar Jackson had a better year statistically than the year he won the Heisman and Baker Mayfield won the trophy.
That's a very good point.
Didn't Tebow have a year like that too? Didn't he have more first place votes than Sam Bradford? But Bradford wound up winning it.
Not that I recall, but I tell you one thing: Sam Bradford had a great year that year. And listen, I'm a Tim Tebow fan, but make no mistake about it: he's not even the best quarterback in Florida. He's the third best quarterback in Florida history, money.
Top, who's above him?
Steve Spurrier would be two, and nobody's better than Danny Werfel. Danny Werfel won four straight SEC titles.
Danny Werfel, baby.
He lost to Nebraska, won a national title, and he lost to Florida State, who finished runner up. Danny Werfel was unbelievable. He doesn't get enough credit how great he was.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, I'm going to tell you right now, I would argue that for an hour and a half. By the way, Tim Tebow was not even the best offensive player on his team.
Who was better than him?
Percy Harvin.
Yeah.
Harvin is the greatest offensive player in the University of Florida's history.
When is the documentary on the mid to late 2000s Florida football teams coming out with?
Oh, that'd be so great. That might rival the U.
I think they were incredibly talented. I think Urban's a great college coach. He's, I think, second or third all-time in winning percentage. But, you know, they were fortunate when they played Oklahoma in 08, and I'm not taking anything away from the Gators, that DeMarco Murray didn't play. If DeMarco Murray plays, they score that touchdown on the goal line, they might win that game. I'm just saying, to lose a talented running back like that made a huge difference.
I like Wyatt bringing up the historical comp, though, because, yes, you need video game numbers to begin with to win the Heisman, then when you've already won it, to go to the next level. And that's why I think you are definitely intrigued in some of these guys in the mid-teens range, right, for Heisman this year?
Yeah, I think you can look at Quinn Ewers at Texas. Texas got the big game against Alabama. Look, just off the top, Texas is going to have two games immediately where you're going to have an opportunity to really be able to look at this team and see where they're at. They play Oklahoma second Saturday in October in Dallas. That's always a marquee game. For my money, if you're a college football fan, you want to go to a neutral game. You go to Ohio State, Michigan. Texas OU would be number two on the list. I think that's as good of a game. Actually, I would actually say it's better than Ohio State, Michigan, because it's a neutral site game. Half the crowd is crimson and cream. The other half is burnt orange. It's at the State Fair of Texas. It's unbelievable. I think Ewers got an opportunity when you look at the schedule. October 7th, actually the first Saturday this year in October. But they're going to play some games that are marquee games that it's going to allow him the exposure. He's a tremendous talent. We saw he was a high, big-time recruit. So Ewers is a guy I would look at. I wouldn't look at Drake May at North Carolina. I don't think the Heels are good enough. Carson Beck at Georgia. The schedule for Georgia is incredibly anemic. They're going to have an opportunity to go 12-0. The only concern I have Carson Beck is, do they wind up in games where they're blowing everybody out, Ben, where he doesn't play in the fourth quarter? Because Georgia plays one team this year. Great job by the graphics people putting up the Georgia schedule real quickly. They play one game November 18th where you've got a team with a season win total over 7.5. That's Tennessee. Other than that, they don't play another team with a season win total of over 7.5. He doesn't have quite the marquee games that Ewers is going to have, that you're going to see out of Sam Hartman at Notre Dame. Remember, Notre Dame plays USC. They play Ohio State. You win those two games, Sam Hartman, go ahead and make plans to go to New York City. Hartman is not a bad bet. Great mobility, good accurate passer. Don't worry about how he projects at the next level. He's a good college quarterback. I like him a lot. I think he's going to upgrade the Notre Dame offense in terms of what his capability is.
16-1, by the way, for the quarterback, Sam Hartman. And I just think about there's a couple teams where I look at their potential to make a run, maybe a one-loss undefeated season, and go, well, if it's not happening unless their starting quarterback just plays out of his mind and carries them. Quinn Ewers at Texas seems like one logical team there, where Texas to go undefeated is plus 750. Same deal with quarterback Jordan Travis at Florida State, plus 750 for the Noles to go undefeated. For either of those two teams, why would you bet the undefeated when you could take the respective quarterback to win the Heisman, even though it is not an automatic that they win? You have to think, if FSU's going undefeated, Travis at 14-1 is going to be at the very least a finalist and likely going to win the thing.
No question about it. If you said to me right now, out of Williams, Daniels, Ewers, Cade Klubnik, I don't even understand why he's 14-1. Travis, May, Bo Nix, Hartman, Penix, and McCarthy, the first bet I would make is Jordan Travis, 14-1. He's a tremendous dual threat. He's a fantastic runner. Caleb Williams has got great mobility. He doesn't run unless he needs to, but he's tremendous at that as well. Look, Williams is the best quarterback in the country. However, when you look at Jordan Travis, and this is why I think it's important when you look at Travis, he plays the LSU game. It's a standalone game on Sunday, on Labor Day weekend, right? That's a game we're all going to watch. Then they play Clemson at the end of September. So in essence, he will have his two biggest games before the calendar even gets to October. So he could be your front runner before the season even gets to where you need to be later in the season. Then you get Miami, which is, even if the Hurricanes are down, rivalry game, always a marquee game. Close out the game with another rival in Florida. So they're going to play enough marquee games. They're going to have a 11. If they win both those games, at worst, they're 11-1, probably 12-0. He's in New York City with a great chance to win it. Wilson on the perimeter, 6'6", big-time receiver. I think he's going to be all ACC this year. I love the Seminoles team. I'm telling you right now, the Seminoles would probably be my best bet to make the college football playoff outside of Georgia.
Amazing. And I love that you go into the primetime window distribution, because that, if you're betting any market that involves voters, that really ought to be the first thing you do.
Well, think about this. The first four games of the year, they play LSU and they play Clemson. You play LSU on Sunday night in a nationally televised game Labor Day weekend. I can tell you right now, everybody I know was watching that game last year on the Sunday. They're going to be watching the game this year because that was a tight game, this game in Orlando. I think Jordan Travis and company have a huge day. I love this team this year. I think Florida State, I don't know if they're going to win a national title, but I think they're a Final Four caliber team.
I wanted to wait to drop it. I'll do it now. I'm all in.
Thank you.
Amal Shah, he's in on the Florida State Seminoles in 2023. We'll have some more college football thoughts still to come. And Adam Burke will join us in studio, talk a couple individual teams in the Big Ten as we get our deep dive ahead of the college football betting guide, which is set to come out in just a couple weeks here from VSiN. But up next, we'll pivot a little bit of NFL. We break down a team a day. And today, we talk the New York Giants off the news that Saquon Barkley not signing an extension. We'll discuss the implications of that, what we expect out of Big Blue in 2023 when we return.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. We're just discussing off air. It's why you should get the VSiN Plus subscription to see our off air conversations.
Those are so great.
They are great. But the decline of the American mall, the latest discussion here in the South Point studio.
So. Well, listen, we were just talking kind of economics of business, and I don't know how some of these malls anywhere survive.
I don't either. Kind of amazing when you really think about it. Mayfair Mall, that's the shout out I'll give. Great establishment in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now it's abandoned. You can still go there. Well, it's closed, but you could walk around. Some YouTuber
you can illegally go in there.
Some YouTuber they let in like a year ago, and he did a whole thing on it. So anyway, speaking of things that are dead inside, Saquon Barkley. you like that transition?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Does not get his contract extension, and now he's in a bit of limbo with the New York Giants. Will he sign the franchise tag, play on the 1 year, just over $10 million deal in this upcoming season? He tweeted, "It is what it is." The other day. And so now we wait them on, and that it leads us into this New York Giants preview for 2023. And And the constant question and debate that has become, what is the real value of running backs in the league, where that was the one position that saw the franchise tag value lower from last offseason into this. And the general consensus is, well, look, it's just not a position where you really feel the need to pay somebody when you have so many plug-and-play guys. And is whether that's fair or unfair, Saquon Barkley now finds himself in a position to either take a pay cut or try to explore other options. But regardless, they'll need him. The Giants will be, if they are to get back to the postseason in 2023 after basically upending all the expectations last year and getting in.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at about the last half a dozen to dozen Super Bowl champions, no team has really had a truly elite running back. They've had great quarterback play, and that's been the difference. And I'm looking right now outside of Philadelphia with Nick Foles and Denver, teams that have won the Super Bowl. I mean, you go back to Super Bowl 43, you've had basically Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady in Tampa. Matthew Stafford is going to be a Hall of Famer. So I think at the end of the day, we're going to see the position continue to be devalued. A couple of different factors with all three of these guys that were franchise tagged at the running back position. Again, if you're unfamiliar with it, the franchise tag takes the highest payroll of the top five at your position in terms of running back this year. I think about $10.1 million, Ben.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So you've got Pollard, who's going to take the deal. He had made under $4 million in his career. Don't get me wrong. Most people would take that kind of money, but we're comparing what the NFL's compensation right. levels are. So Pollard's going to take the 10.1. That was a no-brainer. He's coming off of a femur injury?
Yes.
I think a femur injury. So in that sense, that you're going to take the money. Josh Jacobs is interesting, former first-round pick. He's made some money in his career, but still I can see him potentially not wanting to go to camp, trying to get a longer-term contract. For him, it's more important. Saquon's made already $38 million in his career, so he's not hurting for money, but he's got to try and strike while the iron is hot. But I think where his advantage comes in is I don't think Daniel Jones is going to be as good without Saquon Barkley in the lineup. I think the Giants could suffer. I think it could really hurt this team. And then if you're the Giants at that point in time, what ends up happening? Because I don't believe they can negotiate a long-term contract right now. Is that correct?
Right. Well, now that the window is closed. So, yeah. I mean, sure, they could negotiate, but it can't sign anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't sign anything. So it's sort of a moot point at this point. Fibula, by the way, broken from Tony Pollard. Well, and it leads into what we expect from the Giants in 2023, where they make the postseason despite being bottom 10 in both yards per play on offense and on defense. And they get a whole bunch of really, really good late game situational awareness decisions from their head coach and Brian Daboll, which you and I have talked about this a bunch. That's something that sometimes does not get baked in enough. The ability of a coach to manipulate games, especially late. I just question how much of that is repeatable when the personnel looked subpar across the board, was exposed in a very violent way against Philadelphia in the divisional round, especially now if you add in the Saquon Barkley piece of this, where there is going to be a whole lot of internal strife leading into the year.
Yeah, it's interesting. Right now, DraftKings, and I'm kind of mad this is a minus number, to miss the playoffs on the Giants is minus 190. And if Saquon's not there, Ben, I think the Giants are absolutely a great bet to miss the playoffs. To me, he is a difference maker. He can catch the ball to the backfield. I don't know, Nick Chubb is the best running back, him and Christian McCaffrey in the NFL. McCaffrey's got home run threat every time. Chubb is a consistently good runner, power runner. But is there a better back at taking a 7-yard pass and turning into a 57-yard touchdown than Saquon Barkley?
Yeah.
I mean, he is tremendous. When you look at, he'll have games where he's like 2 yards, 1 yard, 4 yards, 3 yards, and then all of a sudden a 50-yard. I mean,
sure.
He's just unbelievable in terms of making the big play. You go back to his days at Penn State, he did the same thing. There's no running back. Nick Chubb is great, but Nick Chubb is not as vital to the Browns offense or CMC to the 49ers offense as Saquon Barkley is to the Giants offense.
Sort of like asking, is there a quarterback better at face planting in the open field than Daniel Jones? I mean, he's right there. That's exactly the guy. Well, and I think about too, the offensive line, which numbers graded out as a bottom 10 unit last year. Mm-hmm. Think about the strength of that Giants team, which is on the defensive line with a really good interior defensive combo. And you think about Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams, how they did grade out really well individually, yet as a team still were bottom three against the run on an EPA per play basis. So I just wonder they have a couple of individual pieces in New York. It's just even in a season where there was so much success last year, it didn't really come together on an actual statistical basis. And that's where I go, like, what's the actual ceiling? If we're talking, even if we ignore the Saquon Barkley piece of this at running back, what's the actual ceiling of New York right now as that third favorite team in the NFC East?
Yeah, I mean, to me, first of all, they should be the third favorite. Dallas and Philadelphia are so far ahead of them. And I know they played some tough games in the season. But to me, we're going to find out very quickly. They've got the Cowboys and the 49ers and the Seahawks and the Jeez, the Dolphins and the Bills in five of the first six games.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, this team could be 1-5. If Saquon Barkley's not there, they're in serious trouble. Right now, you look at their wide receiving core, not in love with it, Ben. I think they've got, you know, offensively, they're going to have some questions to me if they don't have Saquon Barkley in the lineup. This is not a great, great offensive team when you look at it, and I think that's going to be a real problem. Isaiah Hodgins from Buffalo, Darius Slayton. I'm not a big Darius Slayton guy. They bring over Paris Campbell from Indianapolis. The offensive line, Andrew Thomas is there, of course, but Darren Waller at tight end. Can he be consistent? And then can Daniel Jones get you the football when you need to, when it needs to be delivered?
And think about it. Even if you go through that first week, for 6 weeks of the schedule, Amal, the number of teams that have the ability to beat you over the top with multiple receiving weapons, with a Dallas, with a Seattle now this year, Miami, Buffalo certainly qualifies, not even mentioning the dual threat nature of the San Francisco offense. And this is a secondary. If you look at some of the, just to take a Pro Football Focus, for example, ranks the secondary is 24th in the league as far as personnel heading into the year, 22nd in the linebacker core. And their coverage grades for the linebackers last year were very, very poor. They were a team that relied on the peer pressure from the defensive line. If they did not get that, they were super exposed at the back end. And I wonder how much of that will continue to be an issue in this upcoming year when they didn't make a ton of really, really good moves I was impressed with in their back end defense. And from a secondary perspective, if you are a Giants team that relied on controlling the clock, keeping the clock running with a ground and pound attack with Daniel Jones as a dual threat quarterback, Saquon Barkley on the ground, if now you're playing from behind all the time and your secondary is getting burned left and right, that just makes the calculus that much harder to me.
No, I don't disagree with any of what you said. By the way, is Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson playing for this team this year? Why the hell are they on three games in the first 6 weeks on Sunday night and Monday night football?
Thing.
I mean, Parcells coaching this team as well?
Oh, Ma, you know it. New York based. It's like the Dallas Cowboys. If you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, you don't need the YouTube TV or the Sunday
ticket.
Package. Yeah, Sunday ticket. There we go.
Come on.
Because they're always on national TV every single week.
Wyatt's still getting used to Amal's, you know, facetiousness.
I know. He's new. It's okay.
Wyatt's, you know, like we have Wisconsin ties. We're both very, you know, straightforward, friendly
gentlemen.
Very
nice, friendly people.
Takes
a little
bit of time to get used to the Amal charm. You know? That's all I'm saying. I'm totally with you, though. For the first six on
prime time. They got a Thursday night game as well in San Francisco. It's interesting. You play the Cowboys Sunday night, you go to Arizona, you're going to stay out west and then play the 49ers on a Thursday. Then you play the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. Wow.
What's also interesting to me, especially with the offensive line that's been weak, and now we have question marks about the support system in the backfield with running back Saquon Barkley. Daniel Jones has never thrown for more than 3,205 yards. Career high was last year. Passing yards prop at DraftKings, 3,300.5. And in a sort of market like that, Amal, where we always talk about from a betting perspective, unders and unders and more unders are the way to do this, unless you really, really love and are bullish on a player. That seems like one that is just an auto fire on the under. In addition to the fact that he has the last three seasons for Jones passing the football, 11, 10, and 15 touchdown passes. Even last year, 15 touchdown passes, that number set at 17.5. Both of those would look like pretty clear unders to me.
I would agree with you. You know, to me, Paris Campbell is your biggest acquisition in the wide receiver position. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Look, Paris Campbell's got great speed, but he's not on the field. He's not healthy enough.
Right.
I don't know. This Giants team, they need Saquon Barkley. All I'm telling you is this reminds me, I think it was 93 when Emmett held out. Dallas starts 0-2, and then Jerry Jones then goes and signs Emmett Smith, and all they do is go back and win the Super Bowl.
Sure.
But to me, you need Saquon Barkley in this lineup. And I get you don't want to pay running backs, and you don't want to pay him long-term. I'll tell you right now, if I'm Daniel Jones, I go to the front office and say, listen, you guys overpaid me. You go ahead and give Barkley at least $10 million per year off my contract because I still want to steal $30 million. I'm not even worth $20, but you're paying me $40.
Would love to see that conversation if it played out in the way you would like it to.
Yeah, he should. If he's smart, he wants to get that money.
Daniel Jones and the Giants, can they repeat what they did last year? 7.5 is the win total, and that is getting some action to the under, juiced at -120. We have some interesting season-long props, some potential milestones in the NFL. We'll get into those next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide is coming in just a couple weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. This offer ends July 31st in 13 days, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. We'll have our college football and NFL betting guide, a managing editor, Adam Burke, joining us in studio in about 15 minutes. He'll join us for the final hour here on Sharp Money. In the meantime, we're back. I'm Ben Wilson. Amal Shah joining me on the desk at the South Point in Las Vegas. Talking some season-long milestones, Amal, in the NFL betting. It's funny how, as much as we talk about, if you're going to bet these season-long markets for player totals, you likely want to look under for the vast majority. There's so many different ways a guy can go under. Injury, bad performance, team isn't very good. Just the laundry list goes on and on. But for the guys that you might want to bet, there could be a case to be made. Well, if you like them in general, how about you go for a big plus money price and see them potentially reach a milestone? So on the passing side, we bring this up because of the Tyreek Hill comments the other day.
Right.
He thinks he can receive 2,000 yards in this 2023 season. On the passing side, a quarterback to have 5,000 regular season passing yards in today's day and age, Amal, very realistic possibility that this is out there for a given QB. It is two quarterbacks in the AFC West who are at the top of this list. Patrick Mahomes plus 140, Justin Herbert plus 275. I still don't understand how Herbert's season-long passing total yardage prop is 4,440 and a half. That still remains an insane number to me, given that he was at nearly 4,800 last year, despite playing through torn rib cartilage and has an offensive coordinator who actually exists and evolves in the modern era of 2023, unlike one Joe Lombardi.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And listen, I love Herbert. I think he's a top five quarterback. And with the ability to throw the ball, you look at the receivers they have there. You mentioned, I think that's a great play on his over prop. Some of these surprised me, though. Jimmy Garoppolo, 10-1. Jimmy Garoppolo, if I'm not mistaken, he's never had a 4,000-yard season. I mean, now all of a sudden this guy's going to throw for 5,000 yards.
And he doesn't even play all 17 games. I mean, I would say 10-1 on him playing the full season.
I'll tell you a guy that could be on this list at 10-1. It's a good long shot. It's Dak Prescott. They've got the receiving core with CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. The other thing is, I'm not convinced that Pollard is your guy, is your feature back. You know, he was a great change of pace back, but can he really do it when he's going to carry the mail every week? That remains to be seen. Tua injury concerns are always a factor. Kirk Cousins, of course, you got Justin Jefferson, so you can go ahead and pencil in 1,800 yards right there. Can he come up with 3,200 yards elsewhere? Joe Burrow, I think, has got a great shot. They improve the offensive line. They add the kid from Kansas City to the offensive line at the left tackle position. I think, who's that? Orlando Brown, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he should be in a quick position to be successful there. Herbert, Mahomes, those guys, the numbers are a little bit short, but I don't know. Trevor Lawrence, 7-1, could be there as well. I'm looking for teams who are going to be in games but could be trailing, have the ability. Because the one great thing is, Kansas City's not going to be in too many games where they're trailing and you're going to get free 75 yards just walking the ball right down the field. There's going to be situations where, even as good as the Jags could be in their division, where the Jacksonville Jaguars are trailing and Lawrence is down 10 points, he walks the ball right down the field and gets 75 yards passing. I know 75 doesn't seem like a big number, but if you go from 300 to 375, it changes potentially where you get to at the end of the year. These guys are going to be in the 47 to 4,900 range, and that's going to come down to one game. Also, Mahomes in Kansas City could be in a record situation where they may not need to play week 17. So something to take into consideration. Could be a situation for the Cincinnati Bengals as well. Teams that you think have to vie for a postseason spot, like Dallas, potentially for a division. Prescott could be playing all 17, could potentially get there.
So that's I like Herbert in a situation where that division, how many shootouts do you view the AFC West being in this year? And tempo is really important too for certain teams. I think a lot of people will naturally gravitate if they are bullish on the health of Tua Tagovailoa to stay in all 17 games for Miami this year as a shot at 12-1 them all. But keep in mind, as much as Miami was this blitz to death defensive strategy, which resulted in a lot of high scoring, up tempo, high possession games, they bring in a DC in Vic Fangio, who, if you look at his track record as a DC, is somebody who forces you to take the easy throws right in front. They will not get beat deep downfield. They will not be blitzing a ton that Miami defense this year. So I think it's a little bit of a misnomer to think even if Tagovailoa is healthy, that that Miami offense is all of a sudden going to have all the possessions that they had in 2022, and you're going to put up the kind of video game numbers we saw in a limited sample size for Tagovailoa. I would just tell people steer clear of that 12-1 number because A, the health, and B, I don't believe Miami will be a nearly the same type of pacing team this year. And I'm really interested to see what some of their totals are early on, where they were this, you know, mid to upper 50s totals team last year in the NFL. I see them playing much more tight to the vest, closer to lower scoring NFL games in this upcoming year.
I don't disagree with you. And I thought you brought up a really good point about Fangio and how his defenses perform. And if you're Miami, the shorter the game, the better, because you got to keep Tua healthy. If I'm the Miami Dolphins and I think they've got a good shot this year, which I believe they think they do, you've got to keep Tua upright and without getting hit. And if you can reduce the number of times that's happening, that's going to be a huge benefit for them.
Absolutely. It's why, as we transition to the wide receiver milestones, these are not 2,000 yards because it's never been done before, but 1,500-plus receiving yards is the potential milestone. These DraftKings odds, Tyreek Hill is up there along with Justin Jefferson at plus 150. It's why I wouldn't look to back Tyreek Hill either. I would just, if you were really bullish on him, just take the receiving prop, which is 1,300.5. Which is evenly juiced right now, as opposed to that 2-1 number overall. And Justin Jefferson, it's hard not to like that number at plus money, a guy who has gone over that in the past. Again, it's just a matter of health. And you would think for the Minnesota Vikings, what is really going to change about their offensive approach when we saw how even a team that won all these one score games, that really isn't what you're looking at. It's more, is the production and the offensive game plan going to be there? No reason for us, right, to think that will change in this upcoming year for Jefferson.
No, you're absolutely right. I think he's got a great opportunity. But here's the problem with regular season receiving yards leading the league. To have over 1,500, I think JJ is a great bet because he's a guy who can make big plays, short plays, anything and everything. He's going to make plays. Jamar Chase's ability to run after catch is tremendous. Adams, I would not bet on just simply because what's the quarterback situation going to be with the Raiders? That's a serious concern. By the way, going back to the 5,000 passing yards, it's happened 15 times. Drew Brees literally is 1/3 of the list. He's done it five times in his career. And so Mahomes has done it twice. You mentioned Herbert. Jameis Winston's on the list. Everybody else on that list, Manning, Brees, Brady, Mahomes, Roethlisberger, Dan Marino, Matthew Stafford, and Justin Herbert, he's projecting that way. Anyway, these guys all are Hall of Famers, will be Hall of Famers.
Yeah, it's a great point to make. I also think, too, the thing you want to keep in mind, compare the plus odds you're getting on the actual receiving or passing yards props, like for the actual totals itself.
Yeah.
Because essentially what this is an alt over. Justin Jefferson is set at 1,400.5 on the receiving yards, evenly juiced. So to get 60 more cents to get 100 more receiving yards, to me, it's completely fair, Mo, when you think about the ceiling. Whereas for some of these other guys, if you go further down the list, let's just take like a random example, like a Garrett Wilson. He's set at 1,150.5 at 8-1. So you're now at like that alt is such an aggressively altered price where to now all of a sudden go 350 more yards. I realize they're just basically taking 50 cents for every 100 yards. That's how they're calculating this. That just seems a little bit rich to me. I'd rather just go with one of the shorter guys and not get too crazy. If you like Wilson, just bet him over his receiving yards prop. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. I love the example you used because I was going to say Garrett Wilson's a guy that could potentially get there because of Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Garrett Wilson had 1,000 yards last year with Zach Wilson. The other thing is Garrett Wilson athletically, it's very rare he's going to go up against a DB that's more athletic than him. I think his ability to get open and with the accuracy of Aaron Rodgers, I think he's going to compile some serious stats here. So he's the one guy I would potentially look at going over. DK Metcalf, I would not at the same price because you've got Lockett, you've got Jackson Smith and Jigba as other receivers around you. To me, I like the point you made. If you like Garrett Wilson, bet him over the 1150. But on the long shots list of 8-1, I think Garrett Wilson's absolutely one of the better bets.
Sure. I see it. And it's all, you can compare that to his quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is at 3,950.5 on the pass yards. Mm-hmm. Now, he's more of a long shot on the quarterback list. But it's like, again, what if you're in a position where you only bet that and Rodgers ends up with, say, you know, 4,600 yards and you would have been just an absolute rocking chair winner and you're set, you know, kicking yourself. Why did I not play that? I think sometimes because we have so much time in the summer months, we talk ourselves into these super exotic long shots. And it's like, why? If you like a player, there's a bet right in front of you. That's at better odds. That is like, it might not be the big payout, but it makes much more sense to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the other problem with any of these bets is Rodgers, let's say he starts at the first three games of the year with 400 yards in each game. You still have to deal with the fact that injuries could be a factor. And it's not just to Rodgers or anybody else. I mean, every player, that's the one thing. When you look at these season-long win totals, you miss one game or two games. It's almost very, I don't want to say impossible, but it becomes extremely difficult to achieve either the 5,000 passing yards or the 1,500 yards receiving.
Yeah, well, I also like betting stuff. You have the opportunity in season to play different players. Yeah. This is not, it's not like maybe we'll see it this year. I don't know. Maybe DraftKings will have something different where they'll actually hang these lines every single week and you'll have adjusted season long yardage. But we haven't had that before. No reason to think that that will continue in 2023. So my suggestion is always just tread lightly, not go crazy. Don't go, no, don't do an Adam Burke, just, you know, betting everything on the board. As Adam's about, Adam puts his hands up and is about to throw his hat at me, basically. Anyway, I just wanted to get Adam all riled up before we bring him on because we have the final hour of the show. Adam doesn't actually do that, okay? He's a really smart better. Trust me. We're going to talk college football. We talk baseball right here on VSiN Sharp Money. Adam Burke joins us in studio right after this here on VSiN.